From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump on Tuesday unveiled with great fanfare his version of a peace plan for the long-running conflict between Israel and Palestine. Employing his usual bombastic style filled with superlatives, Trump, in a joint announcement with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, said, quote, "My vision presents a win-win opportunity for both sides, a realistic two-state solution that resolves the risk of Palestinian statehood to Israel's security." A day earlier, Trump had hosted a meeting in the Oval Office with Israeli leaders. The complete absence of Palestinian leaders in the unveiling of Trump's plan underscores the extent to which Palestinians have been sidelined under this administration, even more so than earlier administrations, who at least paid some lip service to the Palestinian side. My guest is Corey Peterson-Smith, Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. Welcome to the program, Corey.
Thank you, Sonali.
So first, this is a plan that has been long anticipated. Trump has been talking about it. He finally released it, but not after meeting with only Israeli leaders. But his entire administration has made very clear, hasn't it, over the past 3 years, that it is putting its foot firmly on the side of the Israelis, in tilting the weight, if you will, given to Israelis. He's made it so clear with previous actions such as moving the embassy to Jerusalem, etc. So we should not really expect that it would be fair to Palestinians, right?
Yeah, Sonali, I don't think he could make it any clearer. I mean, as you said, not only has the United States moved its embassy to Jerusalem in a fulfilling a long-held demand of the Israeli right wing, but the United States has also recently declared that the Israeli illegal settlements in Palestinian-occupied territory are not illegal. The United States has recognized and affirmed Israel's occupation of the Golan Heights in Syrian territory as not illegal. The United States has also cut off aid to Palestinians, both direct aid and aid to the UN mission to Palestinians. The United States has expelled Palestinian diplomats from Washington, D.C. So I don't think it could be clearer that this is so incredibly one-sided. And as with so many things that Trump has done, it is both a continuation of U.S. policy and a kind of brazen new approach. The continuation part is that really for years and decades, the United States has favored Israel. The U.S. has presented itself as an honest broker between so-called two sides, but in fact has given Israeli aid or given aid to Israel throughout, has given Israel all kinds of preference throughout, and so on, and as Israel has entrenched its occupation and colonization of Palestinian land. At this point, what Trump is doing, he's not even doing the pretense of pretending to be an honest broker between both sides. He's very clearly on the side of Israel. And essentially, they have looked to a Palestinian population that has been on the receiving end of Israeli violence throughout Palestine, throughout the West Bank, for Palestinian citizens of Israel, for Palestinian residents of Jerusalem, and of course, in Gaza. Particularly if you look at Gaza, the level of desperation and just difficulty in having a daily existence is so high that the United States essentially said, well, they will have to accept this plan. And in fact, Palestinians have boycotted the whole thing.
I want to play for you and our audience part of what Trump announced on Tuesday in this joint announcement with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. No Palestinian representatives there, but this is part of what Trump said about his peace plan.
On Sunday, I delivered to Prime Minister Netanyahu my vision for peace, prosperity, and a brighter future for the Israelis and Palestinians. This vision for peace is fundamentally different from past proposals. In the past, even the most well-intentioned plans were light on factual details and heavy on conceptual frameworks. By contrast, our plan is 80 pages and is the most detailed proposal ever put forward by far. As I have seen throughout my long career as a deal maker, complex problems require nuanced, fact-based remedies. That is why our proposal provides precise technical solutions to make Israelis, Palestinians, and the region safer and much more prosperous. My vision presents a win-win opportunity for both sides, a realistic two-state solution that resolves the risk of Palestinian statehood to Israel's security. Today, Israel has taken a giant step toward peace. Yesterday, Prime Minister Netanyahu informed me that he is willing to endorse the vision as the basis for direct negotiations. And I will say the general also endorsed, and very strongly, with the Palestinians, a historic breakthrough. And likewise, we have really a situation having to do with a race that is taking place right now. It will end, and we have the support, and it's very important to say this, of both parties and almost all people in Israel. They want peace, and they want peace badly.
That is President Trump on Tuesday morning giving a speech, most of which was coherent during a joint announcement with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Corey Peterson is my guest. Corey, even the very pro-Israel New York Times framed this as a peace plan that strongly favors Israel. Trump seems to think that this is a big gift to the Palestinians because he uses that really critical word, statehood. What does that really mean?
I mean, this is just extraordinary. You know, for Trump to say, I have to say, first of all, for Trump to say, well, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu has said that going forward, this plan can be used in negotiations with the Palestinians. When Palestinians, of course, played no role at any point in the creation of this plan itself, it's really kind of incredible. I mean, Palestinians haven't been part of the process from the very beginning. And so the assumption is that now that Trump, sitting alongside the Israeli prime minister and his rival, another Israeli general, that this plan coming from those three would somehow be accepted by the Palestinians for negotiation is so absurd. And then lastly, you know, the idea, just to respond to your question, the notion that this is in any way an affirmation of Palestinian statehood or in any way on the road to statehood, it's just such a, it's so silly. I mean, this what this does is further entrenches what has been the perhaps most visible obstacle to statehood, which is the rash of Israeli settlements that are spread throughout the West Bank precisely to undermine any contiguous Palestinian social or political entity.
And that's a really important part of this plan. In fact, on the same day that the plan was announced, there was a report showing that Israeli settlements, illegal Israeli settlements in the West Bank, have grown so fast that they are faster than Israeli growth, than growth within Israel proper. And Trump's plan would essentially cement the current settlement, saying that none of that would be undone or upended, which was, of course, the plan all along. First, put illegal settlements in place, exactly, and then proclaim that they are now legal, which is just another word for annexation.
That is precisely right. I mean, this is a decades-long, a plan that's decades in the making. And, you know, the Israelis coined this term of facts on the ground. That is, we're going to arrange the situation by colonizing the land and then force Palestinians to respond to a situation that we have created that is already unjust, and that central to that being these illegal settlements. And so, like you said, this just it further entrenches those settlements. And further, part of the plan is to decide, first of all, that Jerusalem will be solely under Israeli control, and that the Palestinians can have some other city or town, and that can be their capital. So what kind of state has another state determine its capital, you know, for it? The Palestinians are not allowed to have their own diplomatic relations with any other country under this arrangement. I mean, so the idea that this in any way is approaching anything like a state is so absurd.
So speaking of the capital, both Israel and the Palestinians say that Jerusalem is their undivided capital. Again, Trump completely upended U.S. policy by very firmly putting the U.S. on the Israeli side and moving its embassy there. And this plan will provide a Palestinian capital in eastern Jerusalem, where Trump is saying the U.S. would open an embassy. He's offered some to gather $50 billion in international aid to make that embassy happen. But Jerusalem will remain Israel's undivided capital. It just seems like this is, again, just so shamelessly pro-Israel.
Well, that's exactly it. I think that if there's no other takeaway from this, it's that the United States under Trump has abandoned any pretense that this is a kind of even-handed negotiation, or that the United States is treating the Israelis and Palestinians as two even-handed participants. I mean, it must be said, because it's never said in the kind of mainstream conversation about this, that to the extent that there is negotiation between Israel and Palestinians, it's negotiation between occupier and occupied. And so even the condition for an honest negotiation, which is a certain level of equality at the negotiating table, that doesn't exist. And there's not even a gesture to the idea that it should exist. But further, the United States has, in the past, part of the whole U.S. approach has been simultaneously favoring Israel, again, in terms of that kind of aid that it gives, in terms of its using its veto at the United Nations again and again and again to respond to any efforts of within that body to try to hold Israel accountable.
And this was done over successive U.S. presidents, by the way, not just Trump.
Yeah. Precisely, for decades. You know, so on one hand, the United States has done, in so many ways, has favored Israel. On the other hand, it has positioned itself as this kind of neutral, honest broker. And that mask is ripped off entirely. I mean, this is just the United States saying, of course we're pro-Israel, essentially giving Israel the green light to do anything that it wants, and then trying to cow the Palestinians into coming to the negotiation table. And it simply hasn't worked.
So Trump has sort of remained purposefully vague about what statehood for Palestinians means in the announcement on Tuesday. He essentially said that there will be an opportunity for Palestinians to, quote, achieve an independent state of their very own, and that the Palestinians can study the deal, negotiate with Israel, and then, quote, achieve the criteria for statehood, whatever that means. Territory allocated to Palestinians in Trump's plan will remain open and undeveloped for a period of 4 years. Trump posted a map on Twitter, on his Twitter feed, called Vision for Peace Conceptual Map. And it says, it's titled simply The State of Israel. And the blue parts of the map for our TV audience are supposed to be a future state of Palestine, except in the West Bank part of that blue part of the map are, you know, over a dozen dots, numbered dots that are labeled not Israeli settlements, but Israeli enclave communities. So apparently in Trump's vision, there's going to be a Palestinian state that's going to be peppered with Israeli, I don't know, mini states where these, you know, Israeli settlements have taken place. He doesn't seem to have thought this through at all.
Well, I mean, it's lying. I don't know what else to say except that it's in practice doing something and then saying something else. He's calling this a state, and it's to anybody who takes a look, it's so clearly not. So I think there's a few responses here. One is that the United States clearly, and it's become, you know, if it wasn't clear previously, it's become clear recently in recent years that the United States supports a one-state solution, and that is the Israeli state. I mean, that's it. The second point is, I mean, even in the way that Trump talks about this Palestinian, you know, supposed state or state-like entity, it is a state whose borders and whose capital and whose character is determined by the United States and by Israel. And so very obviously that's not an autonomous state. But the other thing that it's really important to say is that within the Palestinian struggle, among Palestinian folks and the solidarity movement, you know, the conversation actually, it includes a conversation about statehood, but it goes far beyond it. It's about rights, actually. It is about the rights of Palestinians throughout Palestine and throughout the world, regardless of what state happens to be in control of the territory that they happen to inhabit. And so there's a conversation about Palestinian citizens of Israel and their right to have their rights respected by the Israeli state that controls the territory where they live. It's a conversation about Palestinians in the West Bank who are occupied by the Israeli military. And they're saying, well, if you are the occupying force, then there's a certain accountability that has to come with that, and we have certain rights. And so even the kind of state framework is out of step with conversations that are happening among Palestinians at the moment.
What has the Palestinian authorities' response been to the so-called peace plan? What has Hamas's response been? Essentially, Palestinian leaders?
Right. I mean, there's actually been a kind of remarkable unity in boycotting it. You know, not only in the recent conversations, of course, again, just to reiterate that these recent conversations that the deal was announced out of involved at the White House, Trump and then two Israeli leaders, you know, Gantz and Netanyahu, and then no Palestinians. So not only recently have Palestinians not been present, but actually last summer when they had this conference in Bahrain to try to galvanize Arab support for the so-called deal of the century, Palestinians boycotted that as well. And that has been a unified boycott.
In terms of what the Israeli political situation has been, how much impact does this peace plan have on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's political future? The day before the plan was announced, he was formally indicted on bribery and corruption charges, and he's sort of barely holding on to power.
Right, that's right. Yeah, it's kind of remarkable that the final negotiations of this plan were between a president who was impeached and a prime minister who's indicted on corruption charges. And I think it remains to be seen exactly what the impact will be. Certainly, Netanyahu will use this. I mean, so much of his strategy in recent years, and Netanyahu is the longest standing prime minister in the history of Israeli prime ministers. But in recent years, so much of his strategy has been about proving his relationship with the United States, and in particular, his relationship with President Trump, is something that is so unique that no other Israeli prime minister can approach that. And therefore, you should stick with me, Netanyahu, who has this great relationship with our number one ally, the United States. So the idea behind this plan is that, once again, it's essentially another massive gift to Israel. It is another massive affirmation and legitimization of what Israel has been doing in the whole Israeli project. And Netanyahu can return to the Israeli electorate and say, see, I have secured this plan. It remains to be seen what impact that will have. At the moment, Israeli politics are so volatile. In March, they will be having their third election in a year. They've been unable to assemble a coalition government. But what we do know is that the Israeli political spectrum, and that volatility, it is tending toward the right, and really the far right, parties that previously were too right wing to have a big hearing in what is already a right wing kind of colonizing country. I mean, at the moment, they are that is the Israeli politics is dominated by the right, the hard right, and the far right. And so we'll see actually how Netanyahu survives. But I think what's clear is that the kind of damage of what it means that Israeli politics and really Israeli society has moved so far to the right, the impact of that on Palestinians has been disastrous. That said, it's important to note that there will be responses too. I mean, you know, when Israel passed the nation state law last year, declaring that only Jewish people have self-determination in this area, that only Israeli symbols and the Israeli flag, these are the official symbols of this country. And so you have to be Jewish to access the full rights of this country. And really, you don't have rights at all if you're not Jewish. When that happened, it was not just kind of received passively by Palestinians. Palestinians throughout Palestine protested in the Israeli elections and so on. And there were some Israelis who were alienated by the nation state law as well. There are other ethnic groups that were alienated and so on. So this is going to have an impact. Certainly if Israel annexes the Jordan Valley, I don't think that will happen without a response from Palestinians. So I think that as significant as this plan is, which is really an attack on Palestinians, the latest of ongoing attacks, that is significant, but it's important for us to take a step back and realize that the direction of how, you know, the injustices that are really at the heart of this conflict in Palestine, those are not resolved by these plans. They are not resolved by the Israeli elections. And really, there are all sorts of other things bubbling that go well beyond the Israeli elections, that go beyond these negotiations between the White House and the Israelis, that are really going to determine the future of this place. In particular, what Palestinians are doing to organize themselves and assert their rights.
And finally, Corey, I just have to ask you this. In all of these negotiations around the Middle East peace plan, where is Jared Kushner? Wasn't he supposed to be the architect of this plan?
You know, he was, you know, somebody... It's kind of remarkable, actually, when you think of, like... First of all, it has to be said, if we're talking about, you know, what must be said, things that must be said are like the United States has no right at all, really, in any role of this in terms of determining the present or the future of people in Palestine at all. But even within that, I mean, the people who Trump has appointed to secure this deal, it's like his son-in-law, you know, his like former bankruptcy lawyer, people who've worked as part of his presidential campaign. So, you know,
and one just sort of wonders whether Trump felt he needed to be the face of this, given the impeachment trial in the Senate.
Right. I mean, I think that like Trump is leaning on Kushner to do all kinds of things. And the
truth is, he is clearly not qualified.
And I mean, the fact is, like, you know, if this plan, you know, the so-called deal of the century is meant to distract from the myriad crises that the Trump administration is facing, not the least of which is the impeachment that's taking place at the very moment of the securing of this plan. You know, he's hoping that people like Jared Kushner can kind of fix it. And he has Jared Kushner trying to fix many things, and these things are not going well for the Trump administration.
Well, so Corey, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us today. Always appreciate your analysis.
I'm always grateful to talk with you, Sonali. Thank you.
My guest has been Corey Peterson-Smith. He's the Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. We've been discussing Trump's grand plan for peace in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.